Welcome to Season 6 of the Fight Science Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan Sullivan. In this series, we are continuing our journey of broadening our knowledge in the field of combat sports science by speaking to experts in the fields of nutrition science, psychology, strength and conditioning, and much more to help you become the best practitioner you can be. Today, our guest on the podcast is Dr. Emerson Franchini. Dr. Franchini has a PhD in physical education and is an associate professor at the School of Physical Education and Sport at the University of Sao Paulo. He is the coordinator of martial arts and combat sports research, where he and his team have been conducting research in combat sports since 1995. He is also a strength and conditioning consultant to a number of Olympic and World Championship judokas, as well as being a second dan black belt himself. This is a great chat where we overview the combat sports research scene from one of the best well-known researchers in the field. Let's get to it. All right, green light means we are live. So back for another episode of the Fight Science Podcast. Now, joining us today, we've got combat sports research royalty all the way from Sao Paulo in Brazil. We've got Dr. Emerson Franchini. Dr. Emerson, thank you for coming on.
Thanks for having me. I'm always glad to talk about combat sports. Great to be with you.
Now, Dr. Franchini, you've got over 25 years experience, probably the most experienced person in this field. And anyone who is into combat sports nutrition or combat sports science who reads articles will no doubt see your work all over ResearchGate. You've been doing this for a very long time. I want to start off, how did you get started in this? I feel like you've been doing this for a long, long time. I'm interested to know, how did you get started in this journey?
Yeah, it's a long story, but I'll try to make it brief. So I was in the undergrad studies. So I used to go to congresses and symposiums, and I was taking part in a specific congress here in Brazil in 1995. And then I just watched some presentation about judo, and I think it was about aerobic training or something like this. And while I was watching the presentation, I was thinking, well, maybe I can do something like this or even better, because as I've never been involved with research, I thought, well, this is easy. I can do that. So I came back to my university, and fortunately, my then girlfriend, now my wife, she was invited to take part in a special program. It's called Brazil Scientific Initiation. So it's the beginning of research for undergrad students. So she said, maybe we can have a try on that. And we started to look for articles and etc. And we wrote the first two projects. And that's how this all started. And after the first project, we were invited to start the masters. And this is the beginning and all the main reason why I started that.
And the rest is history. Now, Dr. Franchini, you've done a lot of research in a lot of different areas, but I want to ask you, from a physiological energetic demand standpoint, how do you classify combat sports from an energy demand standpoint?
Yeah, this is hard, but nowadays there are some research about that. I think the key elements we need to think about is first metabolic power. So how much energy per unit of time these guys need during the combat. So this is the main element we need to think about. Then if possible, we need to think about the specific contributions of the oxidative, phosphagen, and glycolytic systems. And when we think globally, combat sports in general are mainly oxidative, but the main actions, the scoring actions, are supported by phosphagen systems mainly. And when we think about grappling and striking combat sports, we can say that grappling combat sports are a little more glycolytic than striking combat sports. But this is mainly caused by small muscle groups. So the influence of these small muscle groups are not so huge when we think about this globally. So we need also to think about the specific muscles acting or being used, being activated during the main actions, to think about the energy systems contributions globally. So this is a hard mission for someone investigating these sports and also for someone prescribing training, because understanding this, I think it's pretty important to provide a good training session and to provide the best stimulus to improve performance in the long term.
And Dr. Franchini, why is it so hard to classify the different combat sports from an energy output and energy demand standpoint?
The main problem is that combat sports are contact sports, so most of the measurements are basically impossible to conduct during these combats. So what we can do is sometimes provide some simulated matches or some isolated training actions, but it's pretty hard to do this kind of measurements in official competitions or in real conditions. So this is the main problem. Differently from cycling sports like running, cycling, rowing, swimming, it's easier in these sports to do a lot of measurements. But in combat sports, as we have two people fighting, it's pretty hard to do these measurements because we can damage the equipment or even injure the athletes. It's really difficult to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. And you touched on it a little bit before, the difference between the grappling and the striking sports. How much do we know about the difference between the physiological demands between the different types of combat sports?
Well, so far we have some studies using simulated combats in boxing, judo, karate, muay thai, taekwondo, concerning the energy systems contribution. So we can have a pretty good insight concerning how the energy systems work in these combat sports. We also have some other studies assessing blood lactate, heart rate, and some hormonal responses in basically all Olympic combat sports, plus Muay Thai, kickboxing, mixed martial arts, and Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. So it's pretty hard to do a general comparison. But mainly, when we think about striking combat sports, they are more related to ballistic actions, and muscle power are key elements during the scoring actions. On the other hand, when we think about grappling combat sports, while muscle power is also important, these guys need to do these actions after a lot of strength endurance actions. So they need to combine some endurance and some muscle power more than strikers. So this is the key element that differentiates this kind of grappling and striking combat sports. And when we think about mixed martial arts, this is even hard because depending on the athlete, we can have more grappling actions or more striking actions, or maybe half of each. So it's pretty hard to understand what's going on during the match.
Yeah, and you spoke about it before, Dr. Franchini, about how with more traditional and mainstream sports, it's easier to measure these physiological processes. And then as a caveat to that, it's easier to program training. How difficult is it to program effective and efficient training for the different combat sports based on the knowledge about what we know about the physiological output?
I think now we have some good information about some important elements for training prescription. So normally what I think about is we need to understand the athlete, the physiological demand of the competition, and how we are programming the training. So all the time, these three aspects are providing feedback to the other aspects. So we need to know a lot about what's the physiological characteristic of high-level athletes in a specific combat sport, how this person or this athlete is concerning aerobic power, anaerobic power and capacity, strength, muscle power, strength, endurance, and so on. And we need to compare the top level athletes with our athletes to understand what are the strong points of our athletes and which are the weak points of our athletes, and start to program the training based on this. So another important aspect is how these physical abilities provide the proper possibility or the proper actions during the official competition. So in that way, we need to understand how is the competition. We can start about the calendar, how many competitions per year, and we can go as far as we can concerning how many matches in a given day, inside one match, how many rounds, inside one round, how many actions normally the athlete is going to do. And typically, when the athlete is facing another opponent, what kind of actions normally this athlete is successful or not. So we need to think about all these details to provide information for our training program. So it's quite complex because we need to know a lot about the athletes, about the competition, and how the training are affecting this athlete physiological characteristics, physical fitness, and how these aspects are influencing the technical tactical actions during the official competition.
Dr. Franchini, are there any major differences that stand out that you can speak about between, say, elite level world champion, Olympic level athletes, and then say more amateur level athletes? Let's use, say, judo for an example, a field you're very well versed in.
Yeah, in judo, we have some research done about that. Normally, these athletes, top level athletes, have more developed anaerobic fitness, mainly. For example, when we do upper body wingate test, they perform better concerning peak power, mean power. When we do some muscle power testing, for example, bench press or squat, these athletes perform better with heavy loads in terms of muscle power. And they also normally have a higher level of strength endurance, especially for the forearms, because the gripping actions are the most used action during the judo match. So these are key elements differentiating high level judo athletes from lower level ones.
Excellent, excellent. Dr. Franchini, as we said earlier, you've been doing this for a very long time, over 25 years. Are you able to summarize in all those years of research, what are some of the most major findings that you've had in your own research?
Well, it's hard to think about a major finding because research is kind of accumulative work. So small steps all the time to take a building or maybe not a building, but a wall, or a small wall. So it's basically what we have been doing is to work in training areas. The first one is relate to physical conditioning and training applied to combat sports. where we characterize the athletes from the main combat sports. So this is one first step we worked. In the same area, we did some validation of combat sports specific tests. And based on these two aspects, we started to make some training prescriptions based on the physiological characteristics and on validated the combat sports specific tests. So a good synthesis of this area was recently published in English in a special edition of Revista de Artes Marciales Asiáticas, which is a Spanish journal. But the full edition is in English, and this is free available. So this is a publication from our group. And there we have a kind of synthesis of this first main area. The second main area we have been working in the last 10 or 15 years is related to technique and anti-motion studies. So on this area, we directed our efforts to characterize the main actions in many combat sports. And now the main challenge is to understand the interrelationship between technical and tactical actions with physical fitness of combat sports athletes. So this is the future, I think. And a third area was related to aspects that potentially could affect combat sports organization and management, but this is something we worked less. So we did not do a lot of research on this third area. But some examples are related with home advantage in judo, the optimal interval between successive judo world ranking competitions. So this can provide people making decisions concerning how many athletes are going to a specific competition. Where are these competitions? What is the best interval between two successive competitions? So this is more related with decision making, but this is based on a lot of data from, for example, the International Judo Federation. They have a judo-based, they call judobase.org. It's a website with many data about judo competitors. So we can have a lot of information there and try to figure out this kind of information.
Yeah, that's excellent. That's a great summary for 25 years worth of work. Dr. Franchini, we spend a lot of time on the podcast talking about making weight and cutting weight, and that's the area that I'm involved in. And I'm sure you've seen it all when it comes to making weight over your 25 years experience. What do you think overall of the current state of weight cutting in combat sports?
Well, this is another quite complex process. I think this is culturally determined. So we should avoid that, but this is only possible if we change rules. If no changes made, I think people will keep doing this for long. It's funny because when I tell someone not involved with combat sports that two top level athletes lose 10% of their body mass in 1 week, and then they waiting recovery, they recover this amount of body mass, and then they are facing each other 24 hours later, the people say to me, or they ask, well, but why don't they just keep out this all losing process, recovering process, and fight each other with their regular weight? And I said, well, this is funny because they think that they are going to lose, the other guy is not going to lose weight, and the one athlete is facing another weaker athlete. But actually what's going on is that both are going to be weaker than they could be if they did not lose weight during this process. So, but this is what it is. So I think we should avoid this, but this is unlikely to happen. unless we have a very strong rule change and a kind of all the time athletes are being searched for using this. This is not allowed. This cannot be done. So this involves a lot of rule changes.
Yeah, absolutely. And speaking of that, as you said, it's not uncommon, and we've spoken about this time and time again on the podcast, that athletes can lose up to 10% in just a week, plus all the other weight that they've lost getting to that point. You've done some really cool research on the psychological, physiological, and performance effects of doing that on combat athletes. What did you find in that work?
Well, basically, we can say that psychologically, we have some evidence that this process may cause short-term memory impairment. This is quite awful because maybe the athlete is not going to understand the simple coach's instructions during the match. And there is one research, it's not from our group, but a quite interesting one, showing that some athletes have a short memory impairment for about 72 hours, so it's 3 days impairment. And as we know that some athletes are doing this when they are teenagers and they are probably in school age, they are going to school after the competitions, this can have a huge impact on their academic life as well. So this is one aspect. Another psychological effect is depression. So we cannot imagine an athlete performing well if the athlete is kind of depressed to compete. Anxiety, there is a huge increase in anxiety, decreased vigor and self-esteem, increased fatigue and so on. So this is concerning psychological effects. Physiologically, we can say that dehydration is the main result of this process, and a cascade of events is following this, including electrolyte imbalance, reduce the glycogen stores. So normally, when we think about performance, weight loss will decrease endurance, will decrease anaerobic performance, and will decrease strength endurance. Many of these aspects are going to be negatively affected. However, the magnitude of this depends on how much weight was cut, the recovery interval between the weighting and the competition, which allows different interventions to attenuate the negative consequences. So it's quite complex, and I think now, for example, in combat sports where people are losing 10%, 12% or more of their body mass, there is a new professional acting specifically between the starting of the weight loss and mailing between the weighting and the beginning of the competition. Because depending on the time, this interval has a huge effect on the outcome of the competition. Because if the athlete is recovering better here between the weighting and the beginning of the competition, maybe this can be a huge advantage during the competition. So we need to think about this all the time during the process. So it's quite complex as well.
Yeah, it is a very, very complex issue. And you touched on it a little bit earlier, talking about rule changes. Now, asking for a solution for weight cutting is hard, but is changing rule sets the best way to move forward with it?
Yeah, I think we have some evidence from people from USA, especially in college wrestling competitions. They did some changes. These are in the end of the 90s, when there were three deaths of wrestlers. So they changed a lot the rules. So I think something like that can be done, and that can work. But all the time we change something. Some athletes and coaches will start to search for some points where they can still do something to get a small advantage to perform better than the opponent. But basically what they did is they decreased the interval between the waiting and the start of the competition for less than 1 hour. They allowed the athlete to waiting only once. They also prohibited all the artificial rehydration methods. So if the athlete is using some of these methods, and if the athlete is caught doing that, the athlete is banned from the competition. So they also conduct a kind of hydration test, which can be a problem because it's not so easy to implement. And we can discuss the validity of these tests. But this is an approach they are doing. And they established something they call minimal competitive body mass. So it's determined in the beginning of the competitive season. And then the athletes cannot lose more than 1.5% of their body mass per week up to the competition. So when they did all these changes, they were able to decrease the magnitude of weight loss and the prevalence of weight loss in wrestlers. So it's kind of a strong evidence that this can work, but this can also have some cost for the organization, because you need to implement all these steps to monitor the athletes and to guarantee that all is going on properly. So this is a kind of a big problem, especially for combat sports where they do not have a lot of money involved. So this can be a problem.
Yeah, absolutely. And like I said earlier, you've probably seen it all when it comes to combat sports. You've been researching it for 25 years, one of the longest in the field. Where do you feel the research in combat sports is still lacking?
Well, there are a lot of things to be done. So I can think about many aspects, but basically, for example, how people start to practice and why. This is something we should investigate better. And when they start, why some people keep practicing combat sports and some people just leave? We do not have a lot of information about this. So in combat sports, martial arts, and etc. And so this is the base, how people start, why they keep practicing, and the reasons why they leave or the reasons why they keep practicing. So from this up to nutritional, psychological, physiological, and technical tactical aspects of high-level combat sports athletes, we have a huge amount of things to understand better, to improve the quality of the services being done in this industry. And I think research can provide a lot of good information for these aspects, because we increase the probability of doing a good decision-making process when we have a proper information, validated research and knowledge. So, but this is a big problem, because I think this is related to investment. And I do not see a lot of big universities interested in doing research with combat sports. But I think this would be wise, because when we think, for example, about Olympic sports, about 25% of the medals come from combat sports. So it's a lot of medals coming from these sports. When we think about MMA, professional boxing, there are a lot of money involved in these two professional combat sports. And when we think about people practicing martial arts and combat sports around the world, we have a lot of people doing that. So if we are able to understand a lot of aspects involved in these processes, we can improve the quality of the information. We can provide better knowledge for the professional, and these people will have a lot of benefits from this. So maybe in the future, some universes will think more about that. But so far, I think, and there are some research about this, I think it was done by Carlos Gutierrez from Spain. He and his group was showing that most of research about combat sports were not financially supported for research grants or some university grants and etc. So basically, the researchers are doing this by their own efforts and with a lot of problems concerning financial support. So maybe with more investment, we can have a huge increase in combat sports research.
Yeah, absolutely. Great answer. Now, Dr. Franchini, I'm very mindful of your time, so I'll leave this one to be the last question. But as you said, this field is growing and it's becoming really popular, and so many people around the world participate in combat sports. So much of the Olympic medals are dedicated to combat sports. Like you said, there's now this new profession where, you know, there's professionals coming in, getting these guys ready for the competitive season, post weigh-ins. What advice would you give to young students who want to get involved in the field of combat sports?
Well, I think the main point about doing research is to getting a good research question, a relevant question. So this is the most difficult process because you need to find a relevant question. So based on that, you need to read as much as possible of the good articles about the problem you are going to investigate. So this is basic. But while you are focusing on some specific point, we also need to get the big picture of what's happening around our small focus of attention. So, and combining this, I think, is the really important aspect of doing research, because you need to go deep in one problem at a time, but at the same time, you need to understand how this small problem you are trying to solve is related to the big picture of what you are investigating, what you are studying. And another basic advice I could give is to have perseverance. Because in any human activity, if you are not perseverant enough, it's not going to work. So you need to keep moving. And in research, it's not different. You need to keep doing and find new questions and dealing with all the problems involved in data collection and finding subjects and finding financial support and publishing, because normally we also have a problem with combat sports research because sometimes reviewers do not understand what's being done because they are not aware about combat sports in general or your sport specifically. So they sometimes they cannot understand why that is relevant for sports science. So I think we need collectively to provide more information about what combat sports are, how combat sports are important for many aspects in human life. And then I think maybe we can have more success in publishing and provide information for other professionals working directly with the athletes. So I think these are the most important aspects I can think about. I should think more about that, but today I would say something like this.
No, that's absolutely brilliant. So Dr. Emerson Franchini, I appreciate you taking the time to come on. I know you're very, very busy, so I really do appreciate it. Very last thing I want to ask you, if people are listening to this and they want to reach out to you and they want to get in contact with you, they have questions, they have research questions, what's the best way for them to get in contact with you?
Well, after the pandemic, I created some social media accounts. So I have an Instagram account. It's at Emerson_Franchini, CH for Franchini. I also have a profile on ResearchGate, so maybe there it's easier to see our group publications and my contacts, and you can also reach me via email. It's efranchini@usp.br. So I would be glad to discuss any topic concerning combat sports, especially concerning research about combat sports, because this is mainly what I've been doing for the last 25 years. So this is something I really like to do, to discuss, to have new contacts and information about what's going on with research in this field.
No, definitely. And we definitely appreciate all the work that you've done and contributed to the field over those 25 years and all the information you've put out, because it helps people like me who have to take all that knowledge and then put it into practice. So Dr. Franchini, thank you so much for taking the time doing this, and no doubt we'll chat again soon.
Okay, thank you. I hope people could understand my poor English, and let me know about what you thought about. I'll be glad to answer some specific questions. Thank you.
And there it is, another episode of the Fight Science Podcast. Dr. Franchini and his team continue to put out some of the most high quality research in the field, and I cannot wait to see what they have in store for the future. This podcast will be available through the podcast app, iTunes, Spotify, YouTube, and you'll also be able to download it from my website, www.thefightdietitian.com/podcast. If you enjoy listening to the podcast, then be sure to head to the podcast app to give us a rating and leave us a review. Thanks for listening in, and I'll see you guys for the next episode of the Fight Science Podcast.